On in, have a seat. We're going to get right at it tonight. What we're going to do is we're going to talk about two things. We're going to talk about grandparenting in a changing culture, and then we're going to talk about what empty nest are you talking about when kids come home, adult kids when they come home. How do you handle it? What do you do? What are some of the pitfalls of it? Take your Bible, if you would, please turn to 2 Timothy. Chapter 1, 2 Timothy chapter 1. I don't like to do anything without starting off with the Word of God. And so we're going to do that tonight. 2 Timothy chapter 1, and we're going to read a passage. 2 Timothy chapter 1, and we're going to begin reading at verse number 3. Oh, well, let's just start at verse 1 since we're there. 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 1. I'm going to read down through verse 7. It says, Paul, an apostle of Jesus Christ, by the will of God, according to the promise of life which is in Christ Jesus, to Timothy, a beloved son, grace, mercy, and peace from God the Father and Christ Jesus our Lord. I thank God, whom I serve with a pure conscience, as my forefathers did, as without ceasing I remember you in my prayers, night and day, greatly desiring to see you, being mindful of your tears, that I may be filled with joy. When I call to remembrance the genuine faith that is in you, which dwelt first in your grandmother Lois and in your mother Eunice, and I am persuaded is in you also. Therefore, I remind you to stir up the gift of God which is in you through the laying on of my hands, for God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. And I'm not going to preach the passage. I am just going to make one comment about it that I think is quite significant, that Paul in verse number 7 says God hasn't given us the spirit of fear, but of power, of love, and of a sound mind. I've been hearing preachers and teachers for years talk about this passage without taking into consideration the context that when Paul says don't be afraid, his head's almost on the chopping block. This is the last letter he writes. This is the last thing he's ever going to say. We're not going to hear from the Apostle Paul anymore. If you turn over to chapter 4, you'd find that he says, I'm already being poured out, verse 6, as a drink offering, and the time of my departure is at hand. I have fought the good fight. I finished the race. I've kept the faith. There's laid up for me the crown of righteousness, and so on. And so he's dismissing himself. He's saying that, you know, they've already made the declaration. I'm leaving this world, and they're going to take my head off in a few days. And then in verse 7 of chapter 1, with that in mind, he's doing this very important business of teaching his young protege in the faith, his apprentice. He tells him, God didn't give you the spirit of fear. That's pretty amazing coming from a guy whose head's fixing to be on the chopping block. Isn't that something? And so that's an awesome encouragement. But that's not what I want to emphasize. I want to emphasize that he called to remembrance the genuine faith that was in him. And it first dwelt in the grandmother, and then it dwelt in his mother, and he is persuaded that dwells in him. So what I want you to see there is this intergenerational genuine faith that was passed down. And so this is tremendous. Of course, the command of Deuteronomy 6 was to teach God's law and his ways to at least the next two generations. If you just stop and think about that, if the grandparents are teaching the parents and the grandchildren, and then the parents of the children are teaching them, then at any point in time, there are two sets of influencers on those children, both their parents and their grandparents, that are trying to influence them, like Eunice and Lois, or Lois and Eunice, were both working with Timothy, trying to influence him for good and for God. And that's an awesome thought. Paul wrote this to Timothy at a time the world was changing very quickly. World empires were changing. The official languages of the nations were changing. Their physical locations as individuals were changing. And what they called home during that time was changing. They were pushed from place to place. And in the case of Timothy, it seems that his Christianity was passed down by the godly women of his life, not by the men. Now, we don't know. We really don't know what the story was about his father, whether he was a pagan or a believer and just had died, or whether his grandfather was a believer. But we see that it specifically mentions here that it was grandmother and mother that passed it down. So perhaps, I'm not saying it had to be this way, but perhaps even in a situation where there was a single mother that was involved with a son, he still turned out for the Lord, and it's awesome. All of that was to say that the culture was changing, and it was changing very rapidly. That leads me to say this, that culture was changing, culture is changing, and culture will always be changing. So in spite of the fact, we are still supposed to pass the faith down along with its Christian values to the next generation and to the next generation. Deuteronomy 6 specifically says that up to the fourth generation, if possible, but at least to the grandchildren, we go out of our way to teach them what God's Word has to say. So I want to just start with a question tonight, and on your sheet, the question should be there. What cultural differences from previous generations do you think that we deal with today? Now, I've written down a bunch of them, and I'm going to mention them in a minute, and you can write down some. But, I mean, as you look back, what cultural differences are we seeing and are we dealing with today that previous generations, at least let's just think in the focus of our own nation, that previous generations, your generation, your parents' generation, didn't deal with to the degree that our kids and grandkids are dealing with? What do you think? Right here. Gay marriage, there's one. Sexual deviancy, I'll call it. All right, somebody else? The role of women, yeah, more women heads of homes than men heads of homes in America. Think about that. Yeah, Tom? Marriage itself? Marriage and divorce. It's just a different paradigm that we have today. It's just marriages are serial marriages. You know, they're it's nothing for 3-4 marriages in the same family. Come on in, folks. We got seats for you right down front here. No problem. It's got your name on. Good to see you. People with red shirts have to sit right down front. God bless you. Okay, keep going. Let's hear it. Okay, back here. Abortion on demand, abortion for any reason, abortion at any time, abortion paid for by tax dollars, abortion looked at as some sort of glorious thing instead of something that you talk about in hushed tones behind closed doors. It's something that you brag about. You don't have to come up here. I was just kidding you, but I'm glad you did. I'm glad. Thank you so much. Amen. Violence. I missed that one. I didn't include that one. A culture of violence. Yeah, that is a fact. We live in a culture of violence. Did you guys hear about the Oklahoma deal?
Yeah.
The guy's from Australia. He's a baseball player. He came on a scholarship, and he's out jogging, and some fellas decided they didn't have anything better to do, and they were bored to death, so they just went out and shot him and said, that's the second one today. Now, we don't know who the other one is, but they said that on their Facebook page, they said, yeah, I've dropped two today. Just because they were bored. Yes, Gene. Ugh. Yeah, now it was here in the previous generation, but now it's, you know what a big difference right now is? It's not, the drugs are not just here, but now then it's almost passed over. It's not even a big deal. They're legalizing it everywhere. A future possible candidate for the Republican presidential primary, what's Christie or whatever his name is, he's already come out and said that won't be an issue. He won't be fighting medical marijuana anywhere. Just think about that. I mean, they're not even talking about Austin.
Lack of respect for God.
Yeah, no fear of God before their eyes. We're seeing that. You know, no respect, no fear, no reverence. Jim?
How about the judiciary system?
Oh. You know, the judiciary in America, and we could get political and talk about our history and all that stuff, but the judiciary in this country was there to interpret and apply the laws that the legislature wrote. But now then, they write them. Yeah, it's completely, yeah, we've got a completely crazy. What else, Chuck?
Everybody's a winner. Nobody's a loser.
Yeah, you can't give anybody an A or an F in the class. You can't do that. And don't use a red pen. My goodness, you'll ruin that child forever. Lack of responsibility. Keep going. Differences in the culture of our children and grandchildren compared to us and the previous generations. What?
No absolute truth.
No absolutes. Vic? We got that one.
I would have said school age, but I think
Absolutely. It's not just the lack of what's happening at school, but it's the lack of what's not happening at home. Sean.
The lack of personal face-to-face conversation.
Yeah, that's a cultural shift. Yeah, I'm gonna include that in a different terminology, but you're right. That's exactly right. Yeah, Jerry. The sex education. Now, I believe that the terminology of sex education is the problem, because it is not sex education; it is sex motivation and promotion. They're not just educating and telling people how to be wise about it. They are teaching our children to be promiscuous. Victimization of everybody. Everybody's a victim. Nobody's responsible. It's never your fault. Okay, Linda. You know what? Because of early stimulation, I believe it's because of early mental stimulation and the glorification of the body worship that goes on in our nation. This early stimulation in the mind, young girls and young boys are growing up hormonally faster, and it's a fact. And because of that, they're being pushed into early promiscuity. Yes, Jack? And listening to anybody older than them is... don't want to hear what anybody has to say. Isn't that funny? He mentions that, and a few weeks ago I talked about the fact that when Paul taught Titus to start a church on Crete, he said, now you start with the older people, and then they have got to set the standards and teach the younger people. But today, microphones always go in front of the youngest that they can find and see what they think. You know, I saw another hand back there, Thomas.
The glorification of alcohol.
Huh. Man, alcohol is like the beloved. You know, there's a book called The Beloved Enemy. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, alcohol and the love affair that America and the world has with alcohol. And you're exactly right. They glorify it. I mean, there's never been a true advertisement about alcohol on television, radio, or anything. They never tell the end result. All the way back there, yes. Can you believe what happened in California this week? I thought this was something that had never been done before, but in Los Angeles County, in the school district, it's been going on for 10 years that boys and girls can choose the bathroom they want to go to. That's right. If you want to go to a girls' bathroom, you can go ahead, because we can't discriminate, because we need to let you test to find out whether you're a girl or a boy. Now, the governor, Brown, of the state of California, signed it into law. So you got 4% of the state of California that are in favor of it. The rest of them are against it. It doesn't matter. That's the law of the land. Gene.
Many of our churches let our young people know that the Lord placed them here for a purpose, for a meaning.
Mm. Yeah.
And many of our churches don't do it.
Church failure. You know, failure in the pulpit, failure in the youth department, failure in the purpose of life, failure. I mean, yeah, and you know, when God judges, He's not going to judge the culture. He's going to judge the church, because we're supposed to be the ones that are reaching the culture, speaking to the culture, teaching the culture. David.
Entertainment-driven society.
Oh, man. Entertainment is king. Everything for entertainment, even in church. Well, we'll have our kids in there all winter long, but you know, summer's... baseball and soccer and softball and stuff like that. They got to do all that. We'll be back to church in the fall. Whew, right here.
Parents turn their education over to the schools.
Well, turning over education, period. Yep. Delegating it without any involvement. Who else? Yes, right here, Peggy.
Work ethics. Not
wanting to work. All right. Excellent. That's number one on my list. We're going to come to it. Vic. That's today it came out. I don't know if you saw it. There are 6 states in America it does not pay you to work for minimum wage. It's better to not work than to work for minimum wage, right here. Video game craze. Oh, my soul. How come we have an obesity problem in America? Well, it's not just Coca-Cola. has a lot to do with inactivity. It has a lot to do with nonstop television, nonstop video games, nonstop isolation. And that goes back to what somebody else said about what, you know, whether they ever interact face to face with anybody. I saw another hand over here. You guys are really doing well. Right here? Apathy, indifference, whatever. Isn't that something? Isn't that the word that's just like, whatever? Boy, if, you know, whew, man, I don't know if I'm going to be able to handle that when my grandkids get old enough for me to ask them a question or whatever. That's going to be hard. Bonnie's going to have to really step up at that moment. Just help me. I know what she does. She's what she does when I'm fixing to say something or do something. She'll be sitting beside me in that little hand. Just sort of calm down. Just calm down. All right, somebody else. We're going to get going on what I've got. Yep. How about nanny government? Big government. Nanny government. Socialism government.
Let's put our responsibility on the government and off ourselves.
And we keep talking about we don't want to be socialists. We've been socialists for a very long time. When FDR got it through, we became socialists. Period. Right back there, Ronnie. The what? The weather patterns? Okay. I don't know that we can do anything about it or the culture can do, but you are probably right. There are weather. We sure seem to have a lot more wild weather that goes on, that's for sure. Yes, Charlene. Yeah, parents afraid of their children. Parents want to be buddies instead of parents. Afraid of their children, afraid to lead them, parent them. Yes, ma'am.
The TV programs.
Yeah, Leave It to Beaver's not on anymore unless you really, you have to pay a lot of money to get Leave It to Beaver. Yep. Well, that's what I said. You got to pay a lot of money to get it.
Me TV?
Anything called Me TV sounds too narcissistic for me. I don't know if I want. I'm kidding you. All right, who else? I see another hand.
Well, in Dependency Society, I have students that aren't concerned about learning a lot and going on to college and stuff because they'll get some checks.
Why? Yeah. Why give the effort?
Instant gratification.
All right, can we look at my list? You guys are better than I am. Let me give you some stuff. Here's some things that I see clearly. I hope you jotted a few of those things down. Number one, the work ethic is not the same today. We do not have a generation that is ready to get up and go get it and to work. You know, just the whole idea. I mean, even in churches, if a pastor stands up, this church is different because you guys are hungry for the Bible. You're hungry for God's Word. But, you know, in a lot of places you stand up and say, well, you know, Paul had something to say about that. If a man won't work, I don't care how spiritual he seems. If he won't work, he shouldn't eat. Well, some people, well, you know, how cruel and hard-hearted you are. You know, it's just the work ethic. It's not there. Our generation believed it was out there and you can have it. You know, I mean, just, you know, if you work hard enough and put forth the effort. And the truth is, that's still true. I mean, it is still true that the ones who do have the work ethic, they are going to rule. You know, they are going to be in charge. But the whole point is that so few of our society does it. And then next, not to pick on Vic over here, but education largely has become indoctrination to a system more than information. It's more about indoctrinating people to a social mentality and a social structure. Indoctrination about how to get along in this society and, you know, indoctrination concerning, you know, how you're supposed to look at your fellow man and all those things instead of actually giving them an education and information that they need. Education has become indoctrination. Next, kids have grown up with a sense of entitlement. I didn't hear anybody mention that one. They're just entitled to everything. You know, they ought to be able to just have anything they want whenever they want it and right now. You know, that's just what's going on. What did you think about this one? Ambition and goal setting seems to be totally diminishing. The idea of setting a goal, having a, you know, wanting to accomplish something or to attain something is gone. How about this one? Tolerance has been redefined. Tolerance has been redefined. We have a new tolerance. It used to be I'll put up with you even if you don't behave yourself. New tolerance is, well, you can behave any way you want to and I'll affirm your misbehavior. Because you have a right to misbehave, just like I have a, you can define your misbehavior as good behavior, and I have to agree with you. Something wrong with that. Next, Austin said it, personal responsibility has all but vanished. Personal responsibility has all but vanished. Nobody wants to be responsible for themselves or for what they do or the acts they take and so on. I think I'm going to be ill if I hear any more commentary about this Fort Hood massacre guy. The guy who killed 13, shot most of them while they were lying down, unarmed, and hurt 30 more. And the judge decided that the fact that he was yelling Allah Akbar didn't make any difference. It had nothing to do with religion. And so he's really not responsible because of his ideology. And so, I'm going to make a prediction. Because they're going to be fearful of the Muslims in America and they don't want to offend them, he will not get the death penalty. Even though Texas is the biggest death penalty state in the Union, they still won't give it to him because of political correctness. You mark my words. Groupthink has taken over. Groupthink. Kids are not being taught to think, period. Second of all, time to meditate, never. Reason something out, ability to reason or to use logic, that's not there. Groupthink, well, it's what everybody thinks, what everybody's doing, you know. I always get a kick out of young people today, you know, teenagers especially. They say, well, we all want to be different. And I say, no, you don't want to be different. You want to be exactly like every other kid on the block. You want to be exactly like every other kid in the school. That's groupthink. They want to be different from the generation that's gone by. They want to be different from anybody they see as an authority figure. These are the things that we're dealing with. You say, why are you mentioning all these things? Because we've got to deal with this culture. You see, we live here. These are the children and the grandchildren that we have. I mean, these are the facts. We got to overcome some of this stuff. Next, the sense of community, Sean. The sense of community has been reassigned. And I think I'm hitting at what you're talking about. In other words, they have the sense of a world community. They have the sense of a Facebook community. They have a sense of a Twitter community, an electronic community, but they don't have actual interaction with people and like they should have. And so that's something that's just very, very, very sad. Sense of community, sense of rallying together and having a common effort, a common good, it's gone. Informality has taken over. I don't know if you guys are realizing this or not. Informality has taken over completely. There seems to be no desire to ever have a formal moment, a moment where there's any kind of decorum and protocol. They never have to sit up straight and pay attention. I mean, they never have to respect anybody who has any sort of position of authority. We're being told, and it's being crammed down our throats, even as leaders, that you never can demand any kind of decorum from anyone, because if you do, they won't listen to you. I think it's the opposite. I think if they're allowed to relax to the ultimate point, well, they're going to be dreaming and sleeping. They're not going to be listening to what you're having to say. Next, truth is relative. Truth is relative. It's just relative to the situation. You know, truth really doesn't matter too much when you weigh it against convenience. It's convenience that matters. What is convenient, not what is the truth. And there's a famous guy who wrote a book called Inconvenient Truth. Is that the name of it? It was an Inconvenient Truth. And I wonder what he's doing with the truth of this year being the coolest year on record and the last decade being the coolest decade on record. I wonder how he's handling that. Next, respect for material and intellectual property, both public and private, has eroded. Respect for both material and intellectual property. You say, what do you mean by that? Well, they don't respect your house, your yard, your stuff, your car. They don't respect, or neither can they appreciate the value of anything that anybody has done. You understand what I'm talking about? That they do not respect your property materially, and they do not respect intellectual property. I mean, what was the name of this outfit where they're stealing all the music that people had produced and just stealing it and reproducing it, and I forget what they called it, Napster or something like that. And everybody just, well, you know, I have the right to use my machine. Well, you know, you can create a mechanism by which you can fabricate anything. You know, I mean, it's like telling Henry Ford you got no right to have any kind of a copyright or any kind of a patent on anything that you do. This is what they respect: no intellectual or material property that belongs to anybody else. There's no respect for property. I mean, go paint Lincoln's Memorial green if you want to.
So if I have a printer, I have every right to print my own money.
Yeah, well, there you go. See, it'll work. It'll work. See, that's the point. So, yeah. So, I mean, this is something that has eroded. There's no sense of respect for property of any kind. And, you guys have all seen it. You go into a restroom and it's just totally destroyed. You know, or you go into a public place and somebody's installed something really nice and it's just, for the fun of it, it's just totally destroyed. That's wrong. You know, I know that's not new, but it's worse. You know, it's just worse all the time. Let's go on. There is little understanding of money. There's no comprehension of money in young people. And they have this concept that it's just, you just get money. I mean, it's not about working for money, earning money, saving money, having respect for money, knowing. I mean, I don't care whether the dollar's worth what it was 20 years ago or not. I mean, it's worth what it is worth today, but they don't have any respect for it in any sense. It's just, get me some money, and then I can do anything I want to do. They have no idea of how money works, where it comes from, how to save it, how to get it, how to earn it. They don't know anything about it. Next, patience and planning have given away. And I'm just giving you just some of the stuff I thought of on my little peep brain this afternoon. You guys have added a lot to it. Patience and planning have given away to immediate gratification. Now, that's in all areas, you know. I mean, we could go into the sexual world, but I'm not even talking about that. I'm just talking about even young couples can't patiently plan about how they're going to get a new washer and dryer. Nope, they're just going to get it now, right now, and then a new car, too. And then while they're at it, let's get new furniture for the living room. And what do you mean we can't afford this $450,000 house on our $60,000 salary? They don't have, again, that goes back to no understanding of money. And second, patience and planning, they want immediate gratification. Young people grow up and they want to have what took their parents 50 years to get, they want day one. And they assume they can have it. This is the kind of thing we're facing. Sexual purity is not valued as much as it used to be. Sexual purity, in fact, sexual prowess is more, in this age that we're living, practice sexual partners seems to be what is glorified in this nation more than purity. It's sad. A lot of that can be laid right at the foot of the pulpits of the churches for not preaching. Next, honesty is valued, but not practiced as much. Don't you think there's a dearth of honesty? Aren't we missing out on honesty? You know, everybody wants people to tell them the truth, but they don't want to be limited to having to tell the truth. You see what I'm saying? In other words, their honesty is appreciated. We want it, but we just don't want to have to use it. Skepticism abounds. Why? Due to the public disgrace of preachers and politicians. And it does. The young people are just totally skeptical about the outlook on things because they're not stupid. They're very perceptive about hypocrisy. And politicians and preachers, sadly, are probably the worst offenders. Next, Christianity is mostly nominal and not superficial, is what they observe. It's mostly nominal and not superficial. Next, sexual orientation is off limits as to passing judgment. That's the world we live in. The sexual orientation of a person, it is no longer a discussion. It is now off limits as to pass judgment according for somebody's sexual orientation. Well, I mean, that's only the logical, that's just a logical end. You know, he just said, what he said was, is California is now passing or considering?
I think it passed the legislature. I don't know if it's passed both houses. But that
pedophilia is a sexual orientation. Yeah? Well, there's going to be some daddies that are going to react to that no matter what the law says. And then there'll be other laws kick in. Narcissism is rampant. Do you guys know the history of the word narcissism? Do you know what narcissism is? Narcissus. Vic, do you know what it is?
Greek mythology.
Yep. Yeah, Narcissus was a mythological person in Greek mythology that was so enamored with himself that he stared at himself in a pool to the point that he stared at himself so much that he fell into the pool. He went into a daze and a gaze. He fell into the pool and he died, and they call the pool Narcissus' mirror. It was Narcissus' mirror. In other words, he literally stared at himself and was fixated on himself to the point that it killed him. That's where we live. People are narcissistic. It's all about me. Everything's interpreted through how it affects me. This world is about me. My school is about me. Church is about me. We got people in churches like that. Church is about me. Everything's about me, what I want and how I think it ought to be, and everything's, and it's all here for my own promotion. That's narcissism. It's just me, like me TV. Okay, so let me go on. So, narcissism. Next, personal sacrifice is minimal. Do you ever notice how little personal sacrifice people make? You know, even for themselves, even to advance themselves, just very little. Not willing to do it. And then finally on this list, and again, you guys gave just as many or more than I did, but the perception of God, life, and eternity is skewed of this generation. They have no correct perception of God, of life itself, and eternity. In other words, where did I come from? Why am I here? And where am I going? You know, if humanity, and I'll just say this, I'm looking forward to my Genesis study, and I'm going to say this in that study. If we can't get question one right, then question two and three will never be right. If we can't get where did I come from right, then why am I here? We'll never know. And it doesn't make any difference because I'm just a microbe that became a, you know, microbiologist, basically. And I'm just here. I'm just a bump on history, and it doesn't matter. And so where did I come from? Why am I here? Where am I going? And the second two questions mean nothing if they don't get the first one right. And that's why Genesis 1:1 is so very important. We'll talk about that a lot in the next few weeks. So perception of God, life, and eternity. Now, what can we do? There's the situation, so what can we do? So let me go into this, and you guys kind of try to keep up with me as I give you quite a bit of information. What can we do? Now, folks, the Bible is full of principles, precepts, and promises. The book of Proverbs is magnificent on the subjects that I'm talking about right now. I am not going to cite hundreds of verses of Scripture tonight. I'm going to speak in general terms from both Proverbs, wisdom, and also just from common sense and also from experience. So let me share with you, what can we do with the culture that we have in front of us and still, as grandparents, try to make a difference? One, as grandparents, let's consistently set an example of faithfulness to God and to your marriage partner. I've said this in three different lessons. There's nothing more powerful than a godly example. And so consistently set an example of faithfulness to God and to your marriage partner, one that is observable to your children and your grandchildren. Set that example. You say, well, I've made some mistakes in the past. Who hasn't? But now then, in the situation that you're in, be faithful, be honest. Don't hide the truth of the past, but don't slip up on the future. Be consistent. Next, stay available for conversation and interaction. Stay available. If they don't come to you, go to them. If they don't ask you a question, ask them some. Just stay available. Interact for conversation and interaction with grandchildren. Next, write this one down. Ask questions. What are you going to do when you grow up? I don't know. Why don't you know? Who doesn't know if you don't know? What do you like? What are you interested in? Have you ever thought about this? Have you ever thought about that? What about what your dad does? What about what your mother does? What about what your uncle does? Is there anything that interests you? Ask questions to your kids. Do it wisely and in a timely fashion, but ask questions of the grandkids. Talk to them. I do something, and I don't do it all the time. I don't do it as much as I do, but if I have time and I'm not racing to go to some meeting, Bonnie knows that what I like to do is make them sit down and tell me everything that happened today. I do. I had Carolyn not too long ago, and she was over at the house. When was that? Last year, wasn't it? That seemed like just the other day, but it had to be last year. And I said, Carolyn, I want you to tell me everything that you did, everything that you heard, everything that you learned, and what you had for lunch at school today. Tell me about it. I said, no, I want you to tell me. So, well, she thought that was cool. So Next thing you know, I mean, it was 30 minutes, and she's telling me, and then I used this pencil, and then I used that crayon, and then, I, you know, and she just went all the way through it. But you know what I was doing is I want to get them in the habit of giving a report. Not that I'm trying to check up on them, but I want the communication to be really, really broad and open so that they know that I really do. I want to hear what they got to say. Austin. Ask them three things that they learn. Excellent. Ask them. Talk to them. Ask questions. Here's the next thing. Write this down. Do not be afraid to talk about your family history, including both good times and hard times. Talk to them. Engage them in the history of their family, in the history of your family, your parents, your grandparents. We all make fun of the stories of, yeah, it was all uphill both ways to my school when I walked to school through 4 feet of snow. You know, we giggle about that. But you know what? Those are endearing things that we look back and we talk about. You know, how many of you heard those stories? You know, your grandparents or parents. But you know, I mean, you know, that's the truth. You know, I was reading a book this week, and Austin knows this author, maybe some of you do, Dallas Willard. And Dallas Willard was he lived in southwestern Missouri, and he lived in he's maybe 60, 65. He's a brilliant guy. And he's a philosopher. He teaches at the University of California at Berkeley. He's a great Christian. He's the antithesis of everything Berkeley stands for. But I don't know how he still has his job, but he does. But here's the deal. He lived in southwest Missouri, and he tells stories in one of his books about when electricity showed up to his house and how it changed their life whenever they... And so he tells those stories, and his kids and out in California in these very fancy... They can't even imagine what that was like. Telling stories, talking to the kids, and connecting them with some roots of history and of progress gives them the idea that they're part of a line of people in the family. They're not inventing the world. They're not the first ones to ever have a problem or a difficulty. They're not the first ones to ever confront a bully at school. You know, I'm so tired of hearing about bullying at school. They're not the first to ever confront those kind of things. And so we need these stories. We need to tell these kinds of things. So talk about your family history. Here's some more things. What can we do? Now, what are we trying to do? We're trying to make connection across this crazy culture to our kids because we want the lines of communication open. We want to talk to them. Here's another thing. Share traditions and explain them. If you have traditions in your family, if you do certain things at Christmas or you do, I mean, why do you open your presents on the night before Christmas instead of Christmas morning? Why do you open presents? Why do you give presents in the first place? Why do you always go to your grandparents' house on Thanksgiving? Why do you, you know, I mean, you have traditions. Tell them why you have those traditions. Did you ever even stop and think, maybe you don't even know. Do you even know the history of Memorial Day? Well, Memorial Day wasn't Memorial Day. Memorial Day was Decoration Day. Decoration Day began after World War I. And Decoration Day was when we decorated the graves of all those that have died, not just soldiers. It's become about soldiers. But it wasn't about soldiers originally. It was about all of those that had gone on before us, and we recognized, we decorated their gravestones, and so we decorated them. Now I guess we decorate their urns. I don't know. But Decoration Day, that's what it was about. So, but, you know, talk about traditions, explain it to them, and insist on them. In other words, insist on doing it yourself and always give an invitation because you need that opportunity to nail down some traditions in their lives so that there's something that they know that this is what people do, you know. And there's lots of Memorial Day, Flag Day, Labor Day, July the 4th, Thanksgiving, personal days, personal family history days, things that happened on certain moments, you know. An anniversary, what's the big deal about an anniversary? Why do you and Mom stop everything on an anniversary and go do this and find babysitters and everything? Why do Grandma and Grandpa do that? Well, because of, you know, that huge commitment that you made. And it's, you know, it's a lasting thing, anniversaries. And then, go on. Here's another one. It's kind of a crossover, but tell stories. Become a great storyteller. You know, that's a lost art. You know, there was a man in Maryland that was that had a big influence on me when I was in my first church in Maryland. And his name was Jim McFadden. He actually came to this church a couple times way back in his early days. And Jim McFadden was one of the greatest storytellers. He's an old guy. He's from West Virginia. He had more stories than you could ever. And he used to tell stories about different things. And he had stories about a man called Old Bill Misery. And Bill Misery, he just made them all up. But my kids would sit and just, oh, they were just fascinated with his stories. Become a storyteller. Learn to tell stories. Tell and get your grandkids interested in that you have a wealth of information that they've never heard before, that they're not going to get at school. Tell family stories, stories from your childhood, stories that they're not going to get anywhere else. All of these things geared to getting them listening to you, interacting with you. Don't be a bore. So many grandparents become a bore to their grandchildren because, you know, it's always scolding and not actually talking. Find an opportunity to tell stories. Here's keeping going now, having to do with your personal testimony. Go to church, invite them to go, and don't break your Christian commitment to accommodate them. You say, really? You mean I don't accommodate my grandchildren? Well, remember, you got to have some traditions. You got to have some things that you do and some commitments that you keep because of example. And if Junior decides to join the baseball team and his baseball game is at 11 o'clock on Sunday morning, every Sunday morning, you need to keep some commitments to God first and tell him why. Well, honey, I'd love to be at your ball game, and the ones that are not on the time that I dedicate to God who saved me from my sin, then I'll come to your game. But I mean, if I'm not saying you can never miss church. That's not the point. But boy, you give them the idea that there's things more important than God and his worship, they'll run with it. And they won't believe you when you tell them that that's important to you. Go to church. Invite them to go. Don't break your Christian commitments to accommodate them on a regular basis. We're going to keep going. Here we go. Ask them about their plans. What are your plans? If they don't have any plans, talk about it. Say, well, honey, you're going to grow up. What are you going to do? I'm talking about the 12-year-old, the 13-year-old, the 14-year-old. Ask them. Say, what are you going to do? Well, I don't know. I'll do something. No, you... Now's the time to start thinking about what do you like, what are you able to do, what interests you. Ask them about their plans. Next, and this one here many of you won't like. I don't even like it, but I'm going to tell you anyway. Try not to react too strongly when they do something cultural that grinds you. There's lots of things about the culture that I cannot point to chapter and verse, but they just seem ridiculous to me. And you probably guessed it. Things like tattoos, piercings, haircuts, hair colors, craziness, and things like that. I mean, it's going to drive you crazy, but don't shut off a relationship on the basis of something like that. Keep talking. And those kind of things. Dan, you had your hand up.
I'm just saying that you can take it two ways. I'm basically attracted to them because I think they're hurting.
Mm-hmm.
If they're crying out like that,
yeah.
They're hurting. And generally you can find... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, most of the tattoos, the piercings, and even beyond that, when they do things like cuttings and doing self-damage, and it's look at me. It's look at me. I need somebody to look at me. Somebody needs to look at me. Talk to me. You know. So that's really huge. And then confirm your love and relationship with them without affirming evil behavior. Now, I've moved on now from the cultural things that we might not be in our flavor range. I moved on beyond that now. I'm talking about things where it's immoral behavior, impropriety, sexual deviancy, theft, drug abuse, and so on. Things that are terrible. These are grandchildren. Well, that's not somebody to, you know, to grab by the nape of the neck and throw off the cliff. That's not the answer. You know, and so what you do is you confirm your love and the relationship. You are my grandchild. You're somebody that I loved and I've prayed for. What are you doing? You never affirm or approve their behavior. I get asked this question all the time. What happens when they come out of the closet? What happens when somebody comes up and says, well, you know, I just want you to know I've declared myself a homosexual. Well, you know, you should tell them that it's wrong, it's unbiblical, it's not true, they're kidding themselves, they're going with the society, culture has influenced them, this is something that they are learning, it's not something that they were born. You can go through all of those things, but don't affirm it. The last thing you can do is you say, well, I just love you no matter what. You tell them I love you no matter what, but you don't say I just accept you the way you are and this is all okay and we'll get through it together. Don't do that. Because if you affirm the evil behavior, you might as well affirm everything that they do. You just can't. And so you don't affirm things like impropriety, immoral behavior, sexual deviancy. If Junior calls you up and he's your grandson and says, oh, by the way, I have a live-in and we're going to come over. I want to come see you, Grandma. Oh, great. When are you coming? Oh, I'm coming for Thanksgiving, but I'm bringing my girlfriend and we live together. That's interesting. You know, you may let them come, but that doesn't mean you approve. You affirm. You just You cannot do that. Next, share your faith and don't shut up about it. Don't shut up about it. Share your faith. There's somebody say, okay, Grandma, okay, Grandpa, we're going to, you know, we're going to come over there, but I don't want you talking that Jesus stuff. And it's, well, honey, that's who I am. You know, you're talking about, I am the child of God. I'm the co-heir with Jesus Christ. He saved my soul. You're talking about the essence of who I am. Now, if you hate your grandmother or you hate your grandfather, then, you know, I don't know what I could do because I cannot help but talk about him. And he's so relevant to your life. You know, don't shut up about it. Now, that doesn't mean you pounce on them. Doesn't mean you take the Bible to hit them in the head with it. Doesn't mean that every conversation that you ever have with them is, you know, is a Jesus conversation. I understand that won't work either. But on the other hand, don't ever let anybody tongue-tie you to the point that you'll say, okay, you come over and I won't talk about Jesus for the next 17 weeks. No, that can't be a Christian's life. That's just not true. Share your faith. Next, share your struggles. Share your struggles. You say, what? Well, tell them the truth. What did you struggle with? I mean, you know, sometimes that 2 Corinthians chapter 1 passage is very, very important. Sometimes the comfort that we have received from God in our struggles, problems, and hurts is the comfort that we need to turn around and give somebody else. And sometimes by sharing the story of brokenheartedness or maybe it's a young teenage girl and she's gone through a deal where she's been stood up and rejected by some boy and it's the biggest thing in the world to her and you know that she's going to get over it and next week there'll be another boy, but she doesn't. And, you know, that's the time to share struggles. That's the time to talk about your history. That's the time to help them. And so share your struggles. And that's just one avenue. There are many avenues there. Then share your prayer life with them. Pastor Paul gave us some great stuff last week. If you weren't here to hear that, you need to get the CD and listen to that or listen to the MP3 on sharing your prayer. He talked about praying for your kids and grandkids. And what I'm going to say with it is share your prayer life with them by telling them how you're praying for them. Just want you to know, I'm praying for you. I know you're in college second year, and I know it's real hard this semester. But won't you know I am praying for you in your college courses? Oh, really? You know, I mean, I'm praying for you. I'm praying for you to be diligent. I'm praying for you to study hard. I'm praying for you to keep your priorities straight. I'm praying, you know, tell them how you're praying for them. Next, what about them when they're not even believers? They don't want to hear it. Then don't reject them, even if they initially reject Jesus. Always maintain the relationship. Because remember, you know, influence in the lives of other people always runs on the rails of a relationship. If you're going to influence anybody, there has to be that relationship. If you destroy the rails of the relationship, there's no influence. If you say you're not my son anymore, my grandson anymore, my granddaughter anymore, then the influence you have in their life just went out the door with that statement. Maybe you can repair that statement. Maybe you can ask forgiveness for that statement, but that's not a good place to start. And then, this is the last one. Don't put off the hard conversation too long. You say, well, I'm the grandparent. Maybe it's not my responsibility. Well, you know, maybe the hard conversation needs to be with their parents when you see them as grandchildren fixing to step off the cliff morally or step off the cliff in self-indulgence or step off the cliff spiritually or step off. When you see them in a self-destructive mode, start with mom and dad and say, hey, you know, I know I'm just grandma and grandpa here, but, you know, been around a while. I see this behavior. I know where this is going. Have you talked to them? Well, you're just overreacting. No, just leave them alone or something like that. Well, you get a chance when you're with that child. You say, hey, your grandmother loves you. Your grandfather loves you. And I've got to tell you the truth. You know what? These choices you're making are leading to this destination. Here's where you're going. Please stop, turn around, and go another direction. Boy, don't put off the hard conversations too long. All right, that's the stuff I wanted to give you on that. I told you this is a double whammy. And let me give you the next section. There's a lot we could talk about there, and afterwards, if anybody wants to talk, we can. But let me go on to what empty nest are you talking about? That's the next thing on there. What empty nest are you talking about? He said, what do you mean by that? Well, when adult children leave and go on about their lives and then something happens and they come back and you find yourself having to, you know, change that real nice guest room back into just a regular bedroom, or you have to, you know, make room in the basement, or you got to, you know, get rid of that boat in the garage so that in the winter they can put their car in there, or whatever it is. Talking about that, this is the last topic, by the way, of the whole study. Sometimes the adjustments made when the last child moves out don't last too long. The rec room, the guest room, the study, the sewing room, the garden room is needed again because somebody had to come back home. What now? Well, do you just tell them, tough break, you know, you made your bed, now sleep in it, or are we supposed to show compassion to our adult children and to their children? What are we supposed to do? Well, not every case is the same, and you cannot invite evil into your home to the sense of it's going to drag your family down. But in most cases, Bonnie and I were talking this afternoon just for a few minutes, and, you know, God forbid that anything like this ever happened, and we have wonderful mates for our children, but if I'm one of my daughters, you know, when I found out that one of the son-in-laws were mistreating them in some horrible way, and they just, the next thing you know, they're out on the street with their kids, you know, would I take them in? Oh, what do you think the answer to that would be? Absolutely, in a heartbeat. You know what I'm saying? I'm not just going to invite them in because they're fussing and fuming, because they need to get along. But, I mean, if there's physical danger, if there's, you know, yeah, of course, you know, you're going to do what you have to do. Okay? So why might they come home? Here's four reasons I can think of that are really big ones. There may be others. Why might kids have to come home? Well, economics. Economics. After World War II, there weren't enough people for all the jobs. Now there's not enough jobs for all the people. It's a different world, you know. I think there are more jobs out there, and as Vic pointed out, it's more convenient to not work in some states than it is to work. But jobs are not a guarantee. Letter B, marriage deterioration. Marriage falls apart. Something happens, something devastating. They have to come home. Or they want to come home. Next, this one you might not think of so much, but quality of life careers. What do you mean by that? This is a big one. It's getting to be bigger all the time. People who go to school and study for something like, you know, they're going to go to New York and go work on the Wall Street. They're going to just really, they get up there and they get into it, they find, you know, wow, what a rat race. You know, I don't want to do this. And so they decide to come home, go back to college, learn something else, and they're going to get a quality of life career, and they want to come home, move in with mom and dad while they're going to college. That's a big one. It's happening a lot in America. You know, want to come home and do something different. Next, the biggest. Obamacare helps this one immensely. The comfort of home. You know, moms like, you know, a lot of moms and some dads, but a lot of moms, you know, they like the idea of the kids hanging around, you know. Comfort of home and the kids still there and everybody's still together and the comfort of home factor. We talked about that a couple of weeks ago. Why might they come home? All right, well, six problems to anticipate. Here are six big problems to anticipate when adult kids come home. And some of you in here have lived this, and you could probably add lots more, or you could say amen or oh me to the ones that I'm talking about. But here they are. Six problems to anticipate. The first one is obvious. Arguments. Arguments. When there's a big argument and the kid says, why do I have to do it that way? And the mother says, you have to do it that way because I said so. Well, they're not nine anymore. You know, that's probably not going to, you know, not going to get it done. Arguments. Number two, increased need for privacy on both parts. What happened? Did the light go out? Seemed like the lights went out. Okay. Maybe I just passed out for a minute there. I don't know. Increased need for privacy on both parts. Something did go out up there. That one right there. That bulb just burnt out. Whoever that is back there better make a note of that. It'll never get changed. There it is right there.
Years ago that didn't happen.
Oh, really? Yeah. Back in the old days, bulbs didn't burn out, did they? All right, increased need for privacy. You know, I mean, they're not little kids anymore. You know, they gotta have their moments when they're doing their own thing and stuff. And, you know, it's just very difficult. Next, continued sibling rivalries. You say, why would that be if only one comes home? Oh, brother, it might be worse. If you got kids and they had sibling rivalries and then one of them needs to come home and you got the shining example of success, and you got the one that's not doing so good, and who gets the most help? Does the one get rewarded that's out there doing really successful by all the attention, or does the one with the greatest need seem to get all the attention and all the help? You see what I'm saying? And so here's, I want to throw this out there to you. Don't ever forget this. Cain and Abel were not toddlers. Were they? No, Cain and Abel weren't toddlers. They were adults with sibling rivalries. You know, I mean, it just wasn't a good situation at all. Cain killed his brother. So sibling rivalries. And there's all kinds of stories in one of the books I was reading about, you know, you got this one daughter, Debbie, and Debbie is very aggressive and goes out and gets her degree and, you know, marries a great guy. He's a banker. She's a something else. And they've got two perfect kids and things are going on. And then there's Doris. Doris is the other, you know, she's the other sister. And when she was in college, she just, you know, played the part of a, you know, party girl. And that's all she did. And she didn't work at it. And so Debbie, successful. Doris, not so successful. They both get married. They both have kids. One gets a divorce, and the kids get in all kind of trouble, and their kids are all into drugs. And guess which one comes home? Well, guess what the successful one thinks about the other one coming home? And draining mom and dad. So, sibling rivalries. Six problems to anticipate. Next, financial disagreements. And usually this has to do about how the young adult living in your home is spending their money and while they're abusing your hospitality. Everybody's looking at each other out there. You're grinning, you know. You know what I'm talking about. Young people spend their money in wild ways, and it irritates us, you know, especially when they're using our hospitality. Next, extra tension between parents themselves. The parents are at odds over whether they even let them come home in the first place. And then once they get there, on how to set up the arrangement, how long are we going to let them stay, and what are we going to let them do, and, you know, why do I have to put my truck out in the snow and he gets to put his car in the garage? What are you talking about? You know, that kind of thing. No agreement. Extra tension between parents. Next, if there happens to be kids or stepchildren involved, it just complicates the thing all the more. So, yeah, sometimes they have to move in, but boy, those are some things to know ahead of time. All right, here's some positive steps. Positive steps to manage the temporary return. I put the word temporary in there on purpose. Temporary. It should not be a permanent situation. Folks, get this little saying in your mind. There's two things I want to say to you. A man shall leave his mother and father and cleave unto his wife. That's what the Bible, does the Bible say that or not? Of course it does. I mean, God understands. Here's my statement. There is no roof perpetually big enough for two households. There is no home big enough perpetually for two households. So that's why I'm saying temporary. Now, here's some thoughts, okay? Number one, in your conversations, talk, don't yell. Boy, if you could just get on top of that one from the very first. Talk, don't yell. You know, raising the volume probably never settled any problem in history. You know, I don't think it ever really created a good attitude. You know, it always makes things worse. Don't talk, don't yell. The next one, define and divide repetitive tasks. In other words, Billy or Susie is not going to come home under the same circumstances that they had when they were 9 or 10 years old. They're going to come home as an adult. And so you divide and define repetitive tasks. Things like washing clothes, cooking, cleaning, washing or cleaning the house, room by room, the garage, who parks where, taking out the trash, mowing the lawn. In other words, all right, you're coming over here and we're going to give you space and a place and we're going to do this, that, and the other, but I'm not washing your clothes for you. I mean, you get the point? In other words, define and decide and divide the repetitive tasks. Next, decide the time frame. That needs to be discussed. What is the time frame of this arrangement? Okay, you're in trouble. I'm here to help you. Now, it could be very delicate if it's a daughter and blah, 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 and she's had this problem and that problem. She's got kids. Well, getting on her feet is going to take longer. But here's the deal. Decide the time frame. What is it? Is it until marriage? Is it until remarriage? Is it until an educational goal is reached? I'm just giving you some thoughts what it might be. Is it until an educational goal is reached? Is it until a certain job level is attained? Is it until you decide it's long enough? You know, I mean, what is the arrangement? You got to decide this time frame and talk about it ahead of time. So that's something that you do. You decide the time frame. Then D, you talk, don't yell, define and divide repetitive tasks, decide the time frame. D, require them to set some realistic goals to get out on their own again. They have to set some realistic goals. In other words, they don't just move home without any plan. They don't just come in and move in and say, okay, well, I'm just going to stay here for a while and catch my breath and we'll see what happens. No. They come in and say, all right, you can come, but let's talk about how long you're going to be here, and let's talk about what are your plans. What are you going to do to get back out on your own? Talk about it. And so here's some suggestions that I have concerning those things. First, have a time to review the progress toward those goals. In other words, if they say, well, I'm going to be here for 2 years until I get this degree finished. When I get this degree finished and I'm able to move on out and start doing a job, then I'll do that. So you have a time to review the progress. Maybe one, you know, every Sunday night, or maybe the first Monday of the month, or maybe you just get, how you doing? How's your grades? How's it coming? You know, what am I helping you? Is any way, anything I can do? So you have a time to review the progress. What is their plan, in other words? And then agree with them on how you can help with the plan. And tell them how you'll help. Say, well, I'm going to pray for you during this time. You see, you throw that back in there. This is a spiritual thing I'm doing. I'm opening up my home because I love you and because this is a spiritual thing. And he that doesn't take care of his own is worse than an infidel. And so I'm praying for you. There might need to be initial money to give them to restart their lives. You know what I've told you about loans. Loans create enemies. So what you can afford, give. Don't make loans. Loans will never work. They'll always come back to bite you. So maybe some initial money might be given to restart their lives, something that you can live without. Next, then you're going to talk to them. You're going to say you're going to allow them to be there for a specific amount of time. And this is something I think is very, very crucial. And make sure that they are paying something to you. If they are employed, they're gaining some money, then they need to recognize that this is not a rent-free, comfortable situation. That goes back to the one that I said before, why ever leave if it's so comfortable at home? So they need to pay something to you. If it would cost them $900 a month to have their own apartment, then maybe $400 a month at your house. You see what I'm saying? In other words, they need to pay something because they need to understand that this is a situation that is not perpetual and not normal. And so pay something. Maybe you want to save it all up and give it to them when they leave and not even tell them. You know, that's all fine. That's all up to you. But the point is they need to recognize that situation. Then maybe you might help with their kids if they have them with you at specific times. You might provide the use of a temporary vehicle if that's something that they just don't have at that time. And then you can explain your position to them if goals are unmet. Remember, we start off by saying they need to have some realistic goals to get out on their own. Well, then if the goals are unmet, then you need to explain your position. For instance, if they're coming home because they want to get reeducated and go back to school, but they dropped out, got sidetracked, and spent all their time at the casino, I don't think you should just keep on with that. They're spending their money at the casino, spending their time at the casino, or maybe they're going downtown on Court Street drinking every night. You see what I'm saying? I don't think at all that's meeting the goals that they were talking about. So you're going to have to address that at that time and just, you know, I hate to say it this way, but lay down the law in that situation. I'm helping you. I care about you. I love you. But these are my rules. And that's it. Next, be specific at the outset concerning your expectations and what you will not accept. Boy, you got to say these things ahead of time, especially you know what the situation is with your individual children. None of these things don't apply to all kids. But if they're coming back, these are adults coming back home, okay? And here's just some thoughts. No live-ins. You can't move back in here with a live-in. That's just not going to happen. Next, no drugs. Next, no alcohol. Next, no laziness. That'd be on the top of my list. Lay on my couch nonstop, watch my television while I go to work every day, and that's just what you're going to do? No, it's impossible. Your job is find a job, and you will do it 8 hours a day until you get one. That's simple. You know, I mean, yeah. You know, people that want a job find jobs. You know that, don't you? Eventually. All right, so no laziness. And then next, lack of fulfilling their part of the agreement. Lack of progress. Those are all things you tell at the outset. And then be encouraging and seek to help. But going back to what we said before, do not enable their irresponsibility. And I can't go back and teach that lesson. That thing was long and lots of it. I cannot go back and reteach all of that. Now, this last little section is just very quick and it's a very painful one. But I want to talk about parenting your grandchildren. So we've moved to another subject now. We're no longer talking about your adult children moving back home to get a new start. We're going to talk about when you are called upon to parent your grandchildren for whatever reason. It happens all too often today. It may be for the horrible accident that your children have had or health reasons. Sometimes it may be for abandonment. The children just abandon, and that does happen. Whatever the case, it happens. So here's just some thoughts about those things. And here we have it. First, you in dealing with the situation, you have to seek the best situation for your grandchildren. Maybe you're the first person that's approached. You get approached. You're the very first person that's approached. That still doesn't mean you're the very first. You're the very best person for the job. So seek the best situation. Are or is mom or dad out of the question? You have to ask that question. Is mom or dad, are they both out of the question to take care of their own children? And then is there another relative that's more suitable? Is there somebody else that's younger, that's able, that's willing, that has the ability and would be sensitive to it? And so you do that. And what you might want to do as grandparents, and this one might hit you as well, make sure that you're not providing an escape for a rebellious grandchild. You know, if you have grandchildren that keep asking you, I want to come live with you, I want to come live with you, Grandma, Grandpa, I want to come live with you because you understand me and Mom and Dad don't understand. Well, what they're saying is, I don't want to obey Mom and Dad anymore. I want to come live with you. Be careful about that one. That's kind of a side subject, but be careful about it. So, A, seek the best situation for your grandchildren. B, understand the scope and duration of the commitment. You got to ask some questions. Okay, you want them to come live with me. What does that mean? Does that mean on weekends? Does that mean all summer? Does that mean until the parents get back from serving in Afghanistan? Does that mean until the kids graduate from high school? I mean, what is the duration? What is the scope and duration of this commitment that I'm making? Am I keeping them until one of the parents gets out of jail or out of rehab? I mean, what am I doing here? So you got to ask these questions. So one, seek the best situation for the grandchildren. Two, if you receive them, then understand, ask the questions, ask the hard questions. What is the scope and duration? C, understand the role that you are taking. Understand the role that you are taking. It's not just bed and breakfast without instruction or control. You're not just bed and breakfast. You're not just putting somebody in the back room. Because if you're going to act like parents, if you're taking them on as their surrogate parents to an extent, then it's more than that. And then in doing that, in dealing with their parents or one of the parents or with whoever's in charge, do you have permission to influence them? I would not take them in my home if I did not have the permission to influence them for good and for God. Next, permission to correct. Obviously, you know, I mean, you have to have the ability to correct the children. You know, does the 3-year-old have the right to throw all of your saucers across the kitchen and break them and with only a word of warning? I mean, or do you have the right to correct them? And then what are you to do with a rebellious 16-year-old too big for you to handle? I mean, what's the recourse? So you ask some questions. Make sure you understand the role. Then, D, let's say you've decided to do it. You've got the scope and duration. You understand the role you're taking. Then, D, if you do this, then you're going to have to restructure your family life. It is not just a matter of giving them a bed. You're giving them a life and new parents, in a sense. That's what you're doing. Grandparents raising grandchildren, you're doing it over again. They will need space. They will need accommodation. What do you mean accommodation? Well, space means someplace to be. Accommodation means it's going to upset your regular system. Things aren't going to go on as normal as they used to. They will need to grow up and be taught. They're not going to be totally just because they're Because you raised your kids doesn't mean you've already raised those grandchildren who are now acting like your children. They've got to be grown up and they've got to be taught. So you go back to square one. Next, they will need opportunities. They will need opportunities. They'll need to be able to, do they want to sing in the choir? Do they want to play ball? They're going to need some opportunities. It cannot be, you know, just this complete scale back rearing of children. If you're going to rear them, you got to rear them, and they got to have opportunities. Next, they will need encouragement because they've got a situation that is different than most kids. Next, they will need oversight. They can't, you know, child left to himself will bring disgrace to the family, disgrace to the grandparents too. They need oversight. Somebody said a little bit earlier, I think it was Charlene, that the kids are telling the parents what to do. Well, when grandparents get a little older and the kids get in their mind that grandparents are too old to know what's going on, they'll try to manipulate that situation. So, no, that won't work. You got to be on top of it. Let them know you're old. You've been around the block. You know what they're doing, you know. And so they will need oversight. Then this one, they will need money. Really? Cost money to raise children? Yeah. And grandchildren. Next, and maybe the most important of all, recognize God's timing and sovereignty. If this happens, God forbid, if this happens, then recognize God's timing and sovereignty. God has allowed this for a reason. Don't miss the opportunity. And recognize that God may be, through you, saving them. Because otherwise, their life might have been a disaster. I want us to take a moment, and I want to lead you in prayer. There are many prayer needs tonight that we could talk about. Let's keep praying for the Sam Darling family. His wife passed away. We've got these people having surgery this week. Mel Placencia having surgery. We've got Anna Mayer with a blood clot that she needs prayer over. Need to pray for Bruce Terpstra as he's waiting on a kidney donor. Naomi Roby has an aortic surgery, an aortic bypass surgery. And then